So sure, happy to field any questions about this story. Yes, ma'am. That was the best part. Oh, the question is, how honest is the movie starring Andy Garcia for greater glory? Yeah, actually, it's a pretty historically pretty accurate film. They take some liberties with the story. I think for the sake of narrative, that's okay. We do that with movies. That's all right. Andy Garcia plays Enrique Gorostieta, the commander, the general of the Cristero cause. Gorostieta and Jose Sanchez del Rio do not ever meet. He works for a different general, but that's okay for the conflating of these stories for the movie. But it's generally very accurate. It's beautifully shot film. The one thing about the picture that I have kind of an objection to, if you go to Christ, I don't know if you ever look at Crisis Magazine, crisismagazine.org or crisismagazine.com. I have a review of the picture that I wrote when it first came out, whatever that was, four years ago maybe. So if you did Christopher Check for Greater Glory, you would find it. There's an emphasis in the film. In fact, this is one of your questions. There's an emphasis in the film, and certainly in the marketing of the film, on religious liberty. And I'm not opposed to religious liberty. I think I'm in favor of it. I think it's a good idea. But it's not a perfect end in itself, right? So there's an emphasis in the film on religious liberty. But what the men in this story were fighting for and dying for was the holy sacrifice of the Mass, right? Christ the King. And I think I put it on your handout, of course. Pius is encyclical on Christ the King. And, of course, we celebrate that feast now. It's the last event of the liturgical year before Advent in the new calendar. But in the old calendar, when, you know, if you go to Mass at St. Anne's, as I know some of you reactionaries do, right? So there, Christ the King is celebrated in October. And the emphasis on the feast is really one of Christ the King of civil rulers. And this was very much the motive of Pius XI when he issued that encyclical, because Pius XI not only saw what was going on in Mexico, but also in Russia, and very soon what's about to happen, Spain, shortly after, is about to explode into the Spanish Civil War, a story very similar to the one that I just told you. In fact, the persecution of the church there, even more brutal than this. So Pius describes this, he calls it his infernal triangle, and it is in the midst of these governments deliberately rejecting the Catholic Church, declaring war on the Catholic Church, that he writes, political authority comes from Christ the King. It does. That's where it comes from and nowhere else. So this is the point of his encyclical. So now in the new rite, there's an emphasis, a different emphasis, kind of on an eschatological, right, an end times emphasis. So the readings now in the new rite are the judgment, okay? But that isn't the reading in the old rite. It's Christ before Pilate, where Christ says to Pilate, you have that authority because it comes, right, from my Father, right? So anyway, how did I get on this? So there's an emphasis in the film on religious liberty, and I'm in favor of religious liberty, but the reality is the men who were fighting and dying in the field were dying for the holy sacrifice of the Mass. They were dying for Christ the King, and it's important to understand that Pius's encyclical was just a few years beforehand. So that's my one beef with the movie. But, you know, to a modern audience, it's kind of a difficult thing to get across. But beautifully shot, well filmed, well acted. You know, Andy Garcia makes kind of one of these sort of silly, anachronistic speeches, like the same thing you find in the Mel Gibson movies, you know, like freedom and all this. And you just know people didn't talk that way. But it's still quite charming. And well shot, and parts of it almost rise to like the quality of a John Ford movie or Sergio Leone maybe. But I highly, if you haven't seen it, I really, really recommend it to you. And by the way, it was given an R rating by the Motion Picture Association. And, you know, this is just me. I'm very conspiratorial. I think football is rigged, especially after the Packer loss yesterday. I mean, honestly, how can you not think football is rigged? But, so I'm very conspiratorial, but I think that R rating by the MPAA was deliberate to keep people from taking their children to the... I mean, there's some moderately brutal scenes, but, I mean, go watch the Avengers or Guardian of the Galaxy or whatever, and you're going to find, you know, explosions and body parts and all that stuff. So I think that was deliberate. But I recommend the film. You should watch it. Sorry. I'll try to make a shorter answer for the next question. Oh, great. Just one question. Yeah, excellent question. So it's true. The persecution of the Cristeros continued well into the 50s and actually soft persecution of the clergy well into the 70s. I mean, it would be very uncommon to go into Mexico in the 70s and frankly even now in some cases to see priests in clerical attire. So that stuff's not really appealed until the 80s. And then with the defeat of the PRI, help me, Erica, what is PRI? The PRI, the left wing government of Mexico, the PRI, the left wing party. Some one of you knows. Yeah, but okay. So when the guy who's from Ohio takes over around the time of the Bush administration, there's a Mexican president who. Right. So right. But in the 90s, there is a shift. Towards the more conservative in Mexico. What's the guy's name? Vicente Fox. So when Vicente Fox takes over, and what's the name of his... He's from Ohio. Well, his mom is, right? I think so, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, so there's a shift then, and that's kind of about when it takes place. But there's still a thick anti-clerical sentiment in Mexico that probably some of you could speak better to than I can. What's that?
Isn't it still officially illegal?
No, it's not. No, not now. Great. So you have three small group questions to discuss among yourselves. Okay. Oh, am I supposed to lead this?
I can do that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, sure. Let's give Chris a round of applause. Yippee! Yay, thank you, Chris. Yeah, he's going to have some more beer. All right, dinner's over here. Oh, one more question, okay, Rob.
Oh, you know, Trader Joe's. This is what I do. I go to the one here in La Mesa, but they're all good. And if you just wander around the shelves there, the wine buyer is usually hovering around there. And I say, you know, what's good? And he says, how much do you want to spend? And I say, I'm cheap. I have a wife and children. I work for a not-for-profit. And so he says, well, what's your price? So I'm like, I said, anybody can buy a good bottle of wine for $30. I'm looking for that good bottle of wine in that 5 to 8. And they, you know, I mean, it's not like, no, it's not what I would serve to the, well, I might serve it to Pope Francis because he's, you know, he's all about the poor. But if Benedict came, I might spend a little more money. But you know, there's an Italian one there, Grifone. Have you had that? There's a Grifone, and there's a couple of Chilean ones there. And sometimes they have, there's a French Cote de Rhone in sort of the short bottle that you can get for about $5. And you think, I paid $5 for this. I did pretty well. Yeah, so.
So 10 minutes, get in groups of four. Go ahead and start talking. Can it happen here? Defend your answer. Have fun. All right, we're going to wrap it up here. So is there any other questions that came from the questions that Chris posed to you, or does anyone feel like they want to share something moving from his talk? Or yes.
So, what's your name? Casey asked, I think the first thing, which actually is worth exploring, and that is, you know, was what the Cristeros were doing, does it meet the conditions of a just war? There's a book that we carry at Catholic Answers on the Cristero War by a guy up in Los Angeles. What's his name? Jesse Romero. Is that? Who is it? He argues, in fact, that the Cristeros did not meet the condition of just war. I disagree with him, and you know, and we've disagreed. But of course, one of the conditions of just war, right, is a reasonable expectation of success. So how do you measure that? You know, I happen to think, for example, that the American invasion of Iraq, and here I think I have Pope Benedict and Pope St. John Paul on my side, so what did not meet the conditions of a just war for a number of reasons, but one of them that it did not was because there was no reasonable expectation of success, and success wasn't very clearly defined. What did we hope to achieve, you know, in the invasion of Iraq? One of the things we have achieved is the disruption of the Chaldean community and the exposure of the Chaldean community to militant Islam. In any case, but that reasonable expectation of success, that's something that maybe the soldiers needed to judge. But, you know, how do you know? When you've actually started taking over more and more territory in western central Mexico and you're replacing your governments, these governments with new governments or something, with the Cristero-led governments, well, I think that it's there. There certainly was just cause, which is, of course, required, and right intention, right? But to address your question specifically, you know, the church does not forbid violence. She doesn't forbid, for example, the death penalty. Recent popes, John Paul II, have kind of discouraged it, I would say. But the church can never say it's wrong, right? And the catechism is explicit on this point. So the church doesn't forbid violence, but she does require that it is used, when it is used, right, in a just cause. And this is, I think, the most important thing about your question, we should be inclined to go to war very reluctantly. And this is why the church is so specific in laying out the conditions for just war. Because it begins, the church, she begins with the presumption that war is a bad thing. And that bad things are going to happen in the course of a war. There's going to be what, you know, Dick Cheney and these guys so euphemistically refer to as collateral damage, which means death of innocent people, right? And maiming of innocent people, and lives destroyed, and you know, family economies destroyed, and things like that, that we call collateral damage, which is sort of a cynical expression, right? So we know these things are going to happen in any war, especially in modern war, and Pope Benedict was very explicit on this point. He said, especially in modern war, we need to be very careful because of the power of modern weapons, for example, right? So we do have an obligation to try to make the case against going to war. And that's what the just war doctrine. Prove that we should go, give me evidence, the church says. Give me evidence that we should go, all right? And then if the evidence is there, then we leave the outcome to God, right? Because our intention is good. And by the way, in all moral action, right, it's the thing itself, it is a moral act. Is the intention good, right? And the third, circumstances, which include outcome, are, you know, the least important of those three. So a good act, good intention, those are the two more important. So anyway, the church does not forbid violence in a good cause, but she does say you need to try to be sure. You need to discern it insofar as you can. And so there are ample examples throughout history, and I like telling these stories. Joan of Arc is one, and Lepanto is another, and you know, this Cristero War and the Crusades and these sorts of things, where the church has said, yes, in fact, there are times when we need to unsheath our sword and bloody it in the service of Christ the King.